Okay, we're going to take your calls with Stephen Bassett and Grant Cameron when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Grant Cameron with us, Stephen Bassett, your phone call. Stephen, before we go to calls, tell us more about the Clinton administration and the folks you want to go after there.
Yeah, we talked about the Carter administration, those individuals we will seek interviews. And then the Clinton administration, we will be looking to get interviews from these individuals. I think some of them may be known to you. Former President William Clinton, current Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former science advisor and head of Office of Science and Technology Policy, Dr. John Gibbons, former Vice President Al Gore, current the founder and current CEO of the Center for American Progress, John Podesta, former Chief of Staff to Bill Clinton during the Rockefeller Initiative, and current CIA designate, Director Designate Leon Panetta, former designated Secretary of Commerce and now Governor of New Mexico Bill Richardson, former Associate Attorney General Webster Hubbell, former Secretary of Defense Melvin Laird, former Secretary of the Air Force Sheila Widnall. All of these individuals are connected to the issue in the book through the Rockefeller Initiative. And naturally, we would like to know their side of the story, their history as they recall it. And, of course, we want to make sure that what we're going to be writing about them will be correct. So I guess you could say that effective tonight, we're putting all of these fine public servants on notice that Grant or I will be calling on them soon to ask for interviews. Now, I think you know where I'm going here. What's happened is this, George. The trajectory of this issue and its resolution, the history of the presidents, the current politics, the new president, the people selected in the new administration, all of the things happening around the world with respect to the issue, the mounting pressure for disclosure, have all come together at one time. And so, as it happens, this book could be extremely important. Now, it's just one book. We have, Grant and I have colleagues that have written 2, 4, 5, 6 books. So I don't want to get carried away here. I'm simply saying that the nature of the book, its content, the timing, the people involved, and, of course, other events have created a rather special situation. And so I'm going to do my best to make sure that this book has the maximum impact possible and gets its message, the history of the president in this issue, at a time when the presidency of the United States is more important than ever and more focused on by not only the American people but the people around the world. We get that message as far and wide as possible. So the promotion, the pre-promotion of this book prior to release will be just about as extensive as we can possibly make it.
It's a dramatic story, and I wish you both success with it. And more importantly, I wish it success for everybody who's worked in this field for so many years, Stephen and Grant.
Yes, indeed. I know Grant feels the same way. Yes.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Bend, Oregon. Kendall, you are on Coast to Coast. Hey, Kendall.
Hi there. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
I just wanted to say that you guys are doing an awesome job, and I just want to say also that it's extremely important that we get disclosure going as soon as possible because, quite frankly, I just can't believe how childish people are being. I mean, the minute you mention a subject about aliens or UFOs, people are going to look at you with four eyes. I'm just like, come on, people. We have to get with the program here. I mean, do you want to stay in this economical situation or not? People have to start acting mature about this. I mean, what do you think, Stephen?
Well, my position is well known, that we need to resolve this issue as quickly as possible. And that's one of the things about this book's kind of special. Essentially, Grant spent 12 years researching it, and Grant may want to speak to this. He spent 12 years researching this book as a researcher. During that whole time, I was an advocate on the issue, engaging it from a whole other perspective, but clearly engaging the politics, and particularly the White House and Washington and all that stuff, with a heavy focus on the Clinton administration. So the two of us came together to complete the project, you might say, but with these two perspectives in mind, which gives it, I hope, will give the book a certain special quality that will make it appealing. Grant, as he indicated earlier, he's a researcher. He loves the pursuit of the information. I don't think he views himself, and you may want to respond to this, Grant, he views himself as an advocate, which is perfectly fine. In fact, being neutral and not being an advocate role is probably an asset for a researcher. I am an advocate, and so my job is, my view is to make the book as good as possible, and then try to make the book as impacting as possible. Grant, okay. You have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think one of the things in terms of the question that is important, and it was one of the things I did when I first got to research the president, is that the presidents have been involved. Now, maybe not to a big extent, but Bill Clinton, for example, was as he were to use the word, fascinated with the subject. And if you get a New York big book publisher putting this out, and the American people become aware of the fact that the president was actually interested in this and actually spent some time working on this, then it loses that ridicule factor. And that was the whole thing, is that it's very important to know that the president was involved. It's not a thing where it's just a bunch of us crazies running around. This has been discussed at the highest levels of government, and even in the cases when it wasn't, I'm not an American constitutional scholar, but you got some problems in the United States of America if the president of the United States isn't running the show down there.
Yes, indeed. And I think that as the people learn more about how much the presidents were involved in this issue, I think the barriers will fall even further, not only for the public, for the political media. So I will be quite surprised if even before the book comes out, we may see a very substantial number of questions coming from political press to some of the individuals I mentioned, Secretary Clinton, President Clinton, John Podesta, Leon Panetta, just flat-out questions about this. Well, what was your role with the Rockefeller Initiative? Did you know about it? Hillary, what did you and Lawrence Rockefeller talk about when you met at his ranch? These questions start coming, and they will just create more questions. So the book, frankly, could trigger some pretty profound events here before it even comes out, which is great. I mean, if it does, it does. But that remains to be seen. But yeah, let's be clear, we are going to try to interview these people, all of them.
Yeah, let me just add one thing that people really aren't aware. When you take the president, one of the problems we have in terms of what does the president know, what's exactly going on inside the government or inside the group that's running the government or whatever is going on, is that the president has never really addressed this in public. People might be surprised to know that this thing has been going on since the 1940s, and the president has only faced the UFO question publicly in a press conference on two occasions. One was in 1947, Truman faced the question, and in 1954, Eisenhower faced the question. The president has not faced the UFO question since 1954, which is mind-blowing that when you actually come down to it, that it really is not something that any White House person wants to ask, and you're going to get a situation where this might take away the ridicule factor, and somebody's going to stand up at a press conference and ask the question, and things may just start to unfold from there.
And let me add this. I think it's important to make this very important point. Remember that Grant's research and our writing of this book is in the face of formal government suppression of the issue and the suppression of Lord knows how many documents that would normally be available to historians trying to write this up, but aren't available because, well, you know why, the truth embargo. And so that makes it kind of tough. And so to a great extent, we're having to interpolate, we're having to take material that obviously can't be locked down solid, but points in certain directions. And, of course, that'll all be noted, right? We'll do our best to make it clear when we're interpolating, when we're making best estimates. But if people are saying, well, gee, you know, shouldn't you be more solid? Well, yeah, we should be. But remember, the government is deliberately suppressing a vast amount of information about this and deliberately not making it public. So that's not our fault. But I will say this. You know, Grant has been filing FOIAs for years, and a lot of the best stuff we have comes from his FOIA requests. Obama is loosening up the FOIA Act. He's calling on the administration to become more open and transparent, the agencies, and he reversed the Bush restrictions on the Presidential Records Act. So, essentially, they're dropping the barriers and opening up the doors. Now, that may not be in time for that material to get in this book, but I would imagine that there'll be an update of the book, a second edition, down the line when some new FOI material comes out under this new regime. So, again, it's all pointing towards something big happening, I believe, this year, and the book will be part of that, hopefully.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Don in California. Hi, Don.
Hi, George. I've been a UFO buff for years. Great guest tonight. I wanted to share a UFO sighting that I had. I was about 11 years old. It was about 1949, 1950. My father and I were out in our front yard in North Glendale, California. We heard the drone of vengeance, and we looked up, and it was the propeller version of the flying wing, which later we learned that I think they flew from Hawthorne out to the Dry Lakes to do their maneuvering or whatever. But following or surveilling the flying wing were three silver flying saucers. And it was a clear, bright day. There was no swamp gas or anything else. So just wanted to share that with you. It was pretty exciting just seeing the flying wing back in those years. But, well, that's what we saw. There was no doubt about it. So just thought I'd share that with you.
Grant, and what kind of reports do we normally get these days, Grant, of these huge triangular-shaped objects that are strangely close to military bases, but they're so huge, one would think that we just don't have anything that big. Are you still getting reports of these?
I don't spend much time with sightings. I mostly spend my time with presidential stuff. But in terms of triangles, one of the most close encounters I had, and I re-interviewed a guy who was with me, and I hadn't talked to the guy since 1976. He moved to Europe, moved back. I just interviewed him the other day, and he told us the same story. He was there when I was there, and he was describing it being 75 feet away, and it was a giant triangle. It had three lights on it, and the lights I had, it was looking with binoculars. It was above the car. I was looking up at this thing, and it covered the entire sky. I saw the triangles back in 75, so now they're talking about triangles and this being American technology, you know, some secret plane out of Area 51. Well, they were around in Canada. If that's true, they were flying them in Canada back in 1975.
Super. Okay. Let's go to Thomas. First-time caller, Port Angeles, Washington. You're up with us, Thomas.
Howdy, Stephen. Howdy, George. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, we're all well. Thanks.
The fact that there's water on Mars, this was just like a big revelation to us, you know? And because, you know, we all grew up with the concept of, like, you know, Mars was just a desert, barren planet, right? But, you know, I wonder why that is such a big deal. I mean, I wonder why we all believe that. Because there's hydrogen and oxygen throughout the planets and, you know, throughout the solar system and stuff. We don't see why it's such a big surprise that there's water there.
Time release. Carl Sagan made a famous statement many, many years ago. I forget when, 70s? Roughly, I'm paraphrasing here.
And that's about the same time he said there wasn't a smidgen of evidence of life elsewhere in the universe. It was like 76.
All right. I don't recall that, but he may have said that. But he also said something else, and that was that if we find one microbe, one cellular animal, right, living outside the Earth, it means that the entire galaxy is loaded with life.
Well, I disagree, Stephen, because if we go to Mars and we look at the soil, good, right, we may find diatoms and rhizotomes there that got deposited there for meteoric impact on our planet.
That's possible.
A lot of that stuff got picked up.
That is possible.
That's true. I mean, I must admit that you could do, but I think he was speaking somewhat metaphorically, basically saying, look, if life could have generated elsewhere, independent of the Earth, then it means it's all over the galaxy.
Well, Sagan was a believer in extraterrestrial life out there. He wasn't a believer that we've been visited by any means. And in a number of his writings, including his book Contact, which was turned into that great movie, you know, he hypothesized what it would be like for communication. But he was a believer that it was out there.
Publicly, he had a public stance. He had a private stance. The story of Carl Sagan is not known. I hope one day we do know it. By the way, you may have noted just a few weeks ago, stories broke on some new scientific assessments. I think BBC broke the initial one. Estimates now, a billion Earths in the galaxy. Isn't that funny? And, of course, NASA's finding a little bit more water every day. This is all time relief. They got the idea decades ago that the public somehow were different than the public servants, people that worked in the military, people that worked in government. Those people had sort of iron wills and great psychological strength, and the rest of us were all basically silly putty, capable of coming apart with the slightest jar. And so they just got this idea that, boy, they just better just handle this thing so carefully and so slowly and play games with it, elsewise we would all go nuts. Well, that was a massive example of government hubris. I think we could have handled it better than they handled it, to be perfectly honest with you. And so the actual what they know about Mars or don't know about Mars, and I don't think any of it adds up. I think it's all somewhat skewered. And until we get past disclosure, we're not going to really know the scientific history of the 20th century, the history of NASA, the history of the intelligence, military intelligence projects, and everything else. We've been sort of swimming around in a very polluted pool, and I want to get out of that pool, dry off, and get some fresh water on me. And so the answer to the gentleman's question is, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. In fact, a whole lot of things haven't made sense since the day they formalized the truth embargo on the ET issue in late 1952.
Well, good point. Let's go next to Springfield, Oregon. Joe, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, I just wanted to mention to you a thing that happened when Stephen Greer came to the capital city of Oregon, Salem. He was lecturing here on his disclosure project and showing us his videos of all his insider testifiers. And he mentioned that one time he was, that Helen Thomas had told him this story. Helen Thomas, the grand dame of the Capitol Hill Press Club, she said that one time she was at a dinner with Bill Clinton, and she said, well, and the UFO topic came up, and she said, well, President Clinton, why don't you remove the lid off of the secrecy of the UFO topic? And he came over to her personally and whispered in her ear, you know, dear, there's a government within the government that I have no control over. And that came from Helen Thomas to Stephen Greer to me.
My understanding is that, in fact, was Sarah McClendon, but the story is the same. Grant, what's your understanding on that story?
Yeah, it was Sarah McClendon, and Steve, actually, you knew Sarah McClendon, right?
Oh, yeah, I knew her very well.
Yeah.
In fact, that's a whole nother long story.
Yeah, that is a story that's I know Stephen Greer has told a number of times, and it's a pretty dramatic story if that's true. That's what I'm saying. I mean, if Clinton did actually believe that there was a government inside the government and he didn't control it, that's pretty bad news.
But it's totally believable. They liked Sarah a lot. Both he and Hillary liked her a lot and treated her very, very well. And she asked that question. I could see him giving her a private response. He's not the only president. I mean, there's a government within a government. Jimmy Carter found that out big time when he tried to bring the ET issue out.
Finding that more and more, Stephen, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. But I think what's going on right now is all the trees in Washington are being shaken from the roots up. All of the institutions, all of the embedded powers have lost their footing. Everything is now up for grabs, and there has never been a better opportunity for the public to jump in and have an impact and shake a few trees themselves, drop some apples, and start making some changes. We really had better not miss this opportunity. It's not just the UFO issue at stake here. It's really the whole relationship of the government to the people. And I think history will show that the UFO researchers and activists will end up playing a far bigger role in where the U.S. goes as a nation in the next 10 years than just their UFO work. The work they did there is actually going to have a much broader impact.
We'll be back with final phone calls with our two guests, Stephen Bassett and Grant Cameron, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour we'll be chatting with Jim Elvidge. He's the author of the latest work, The Universe Solved, basically saying, what if reality isn't really what you think it is? What if our world was just a big video game? Should be a fascinating 2 hours with Jim. When we come back, final phone calls with Grant Cameron and Stephen Bassett. Disclosure on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Grant Cameron, Stephen Bassett, and the rest of your call. Stephen, you have an event coming up, and we'll talk about Grant's little event in the Ozark UFO Conference, too. But you've got the X Conference coming up again in April, and I'm going to attend that. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be doing a live program with our affiliate WMAL that Friday night. Tell us briefly about that.
Yeah, the X Conference 2009, April 17 to 19 at the Hilton there. The website is x-conference.com. You're giving a two-hour special presentation. You're going to be going back over some old shows with some clips. Of course, you're doing some autographing and meeting your fans. We've got Edgar Mitchell giving a full lecture this time in 30 minutes of questions. Graham Hancock is coming up from the UK. He's published 5 million books. Nick Pope, who's been all kinds of news out of the UK, is coming over to lecture. And then John Alexander and I are going to be doing an hour and a half debate on the UFO issue, which I am looking forward to. I can't even tell you. We've got Colin Andrews coming down. He hasn't lectured in a long time. And, of course, some of the top activists, Richard Dolan will be there, Michael Sala, Alfred Weber, Pella Harris, Art Campbell's talking about the Eisenhower era and some developments at Holloman Air Force Base. We have some activists coming in. It's a packed 3 days. We hope as many of your listeners can join us as possible. They can register at x-conference.com.
Great, and we've got a link for you on that at coasttocoastam.com on my calendar, Stephen. And I look forward to seeing you again, too. You're always just a fun guy to be with and very knowledgeable as well. And, Grant, you've got an event coming up at the Ozark UFO Conference in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little bit of Obama. I'll go through the whole election campaign, what's happened since the election. Not much, but about three events. Then I have these two women I mentioned to you, these that talked about the Roosevelt, the bodies. I'm interviewing them on the way down. And I've got a NORAD, a captain from NORAD, late 1950s. Got him on tape, 17 minutes, scrambled jet. And then years of discussions that he had with a NORAD senior intelligence officer as to what was going on. And then from there, I go to the Eisenhower Library, and I'm going to spend a week. So if your guy comes with a film, I'm going to be there. I can track what's going on. And,
super.
That's is my highlight. I'll be doing some research and digging through old files, and some of them people have never seen before, and seeing what I can find.
All right, very good. Back to the phones now, east of the Rockies in Moorhead, Kentucky. Earl, you're on with Steve Bassett, Grant Cameron. Go ahead, Earl. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good show. I myself have seen something very questionable here in Kentucky, but really my question is to you, have you gone through any sort of scenario where you've how this disclosure would impact our society? You know, our economy is not doing real good right now. I mean, something that of that magnitude, could be pretty intense, for us to swallow, to digest. Have you gone through any scenario or anything? Have anything?
Go ahead, Steve Bassett.
Well, a number of people at the conference are going to be talking about post-disclosure issues and trying to address that. It's a very complex and deep subject, to say the least. But let me give you the short answer. I think Americans have already shown that they can digest just about anything. I mean, if you think about the last 60 years and what we've had to chomp down on, Vietnam War, wars in the Middle East, terrorism, a Cold War where it could all be incinerated by nukes at any time, economic meltdowns, and on and on and on. Well, we suck it up, keep on going. And so I have total confidence the American people will digest the ET confirmation quite well. And to be honest with you, there's so much potential upside to it, so many tremendous possibilities that emerge in the post-disclosure world, not just from the information, but from probably realignment and reform of some of the government issues we've been dealing with, that there's a lot of good there. I mean, it's not like it's not all a bitter pill. And so, sure, there'll be change, and there'll be some upheaval, there'll be some confusion, but in general, I think you're going to have a very exciting time. And I'm not really that concerned about it, but I can't guarantee that.
I don't think people will be shocked, Stephen. I think they're prepared for this.
It's going to be I've said many times now, and I'm going to use this phrase a lot. Because when I get a hold of a phrase, I milk it to death. It's like it will at one and the same time be the most profound event in human history, and the most anticlimactic event in human history.
No doubt. Boise, Idaho. Eric on the wild card line. Take it away, Eric.
Hey, good evening. I just want to agree with what you just said a minute ago. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Disclosure is going to be a lot more than just, life exists in the universe. What the gentleman was saying earlier, he was debating about life in the universe. If you look at the planet, I mean, all the diverse cultures and all the diverse life in our planet, and it's so massive as we see it on a microcosmic level, the universe has got to be filled with life. I mean, everything, it reflects everything else. I mean, it's obvious. And I just wanted to say that the time that we're in now, the way the economy is breaking down, it's time for the whole world to evaluate just what our purpose is here. Are we, that's what this is coming to, and it's all coming to a head. And Obama, he's definitely the one to be in there. I live in Idaho, so I live in a state where, everybody says, well, we want somebody with experience. I'm glad he don't have experience. I don't want somebody that's been in there 20 years. He's been a senator for 2 years. That's great. He's not brainwashed and part of the good old boy network. So yeah, he's going to be a good president. I believe
he has many attributes. He has many attributes that could make him the ideal disclosure president. One, he's an innocent on the issue, so he doesn't have any apologizing to do. Two, he's brilliant. He's more than capable of intellectually dealing with all of the unintended consequences and other factors. Three, he's more popular than probably any president that has come into office, and his popularity is even greater overseas than it is at home. And when you're going to bring a message like that to the world, popular is good. He also happens to be a man of color, and last time I checked, the majority of people in the world are, in fact, of color. Who knew, right? And I think that is going to be helpful. But at the same time, he sent clear messages to the military intelligence community that he's not some, ultra-leftist. He's a centrist on military matters. He is listening to them. He's putting people in place that they can relate to. I think he's ideal. And that just makes it more likely that we're going to see something very soon. Again, I'm picking the month of April. I'm taking bets. I'll lay 3-1 right on the final four there.
I may take this bet with you, Stephen.
Okay.
I'll put a C note on it. Let's go to Northridge, California. Jason, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening.
Hey.
Good morning.
Morning.
Stephen, it's a pleasure to speak with you on the air. Getting back to something an earlier caller touched on, I wanted to ask Stephen if you felt that some of the people appointed to be in the Obama administration were chosen not because they are actively seeking to disclose over the next 4 years, but rather that they may have been appointed upon the contingency that the hand of the government will be forced over the next 4 years, either by the people, other nations, or the ETs themselves. And to touch on some of the things that we were just discussing earlier, are they qualified? And Obama was just out here on the West Coast doing some town halls, and it would have been very nice to see someone ask the question of the president. But I just wanted to see what Stephen and Grant thought about that.
Grant, I'm sure Manson comments. I have talked at length about this. I believe that the people he selected across the board in about 8 different positions are so resonant with the disclosure scenario that it's just inconceivable to me that it's an accident. And so I'm under the impression that that these positions are being filled specifically because disclosure is planned and anticipated very, very, very soon. Grant may not see it that way. Grant, what are your thoughts on the Obama selections and how that seems to
be? Yeah, I see it a little bit different. I always have the look at the idea about, because I work my way up to the presidents to see what do the presidents know. Then I start to wonder whether the president really knows. So I always try to define what do you mean by government. Like in terms of Obama, does this guy really know anything when he comes in? Or is he like Clinton? He's going to try to figure it out. Now, I'll agree that Obama is an open-minded guy, really has no axe to grind, and yeah, okay, what's the problem? Let's get this stuff out. Whether he has anything, because, for example, like NASA, he hasn't announced NASA head yet. He's really, on a number of occasions, talked about not really being that interested in outer space, manned space program, this sort of stuff. And so I think you need, it's the balancing act of who's in the government, does the elected government know? And the more I see, the more I think there's this idea of what Bill Clinton talks about, that the elected government may have been hijacked by a group of people.
That, again, one of the most important parts here, though, when assessing that, is, of course, that Clinton was facing the issue in 93 to 96. Of course, it's now another 13 years later. A lot has happened, and, of course, we know events around the world are really accelerating the pace here. But let me throw this out. We have an awful lot of information connecting people in the administration to the UFO issue. The press is covering this issue at an unprecedented level. I'm logging in scores of articles every single week on the PRG media coverage archive. Just in the last few days, almost 50 articles, most of them out of the UK. They're covering everything. The press are just about ready to pounce. But I am holding back. PRG has definitely been holding back. We're not pushing certain things out there. We're not pressing any of the people in the administration, though we are coming to them for interviews pretty soon about the book, because we know that this is a transition time. They're trying to get comfortable. They've only been in 60 days. There are certain things that had to get done. But the window opens wide in those last 30 days, April 1 to April 30. And if disclosure does not take place in April, I'm going to tell your audience right now, starting May 1, you're going to start seeing some sparks fly, because we have got a lot of stuff, and we are really going to hit the media hard with it. And if I'm correct, the media is going to bite, and the questions are going to start flying. And so they're going to be facing a very tough road after April if they don't disclose. And more importantly, if the government of the United States doesn't disclose shortly in the spring, I believe another nation will disclose before the end of the year, and the U.S. will just be in the back seat.
I would love to see the comments of the former presidents who are alive who would comment on this book.
Oh, wouldn't I?
Oh, my.
Let's let you know. We'll keep you apprised if some of those interviews come down.
Absolutely.
We'll obviously honor any confidentiality we provide, but let's just hope that a number of the individuals I mentioned are going to come forward and give an interview and give us their side of the story. Because if they don't, we're going to write it up anyway, and they'll deal with it. And let me make something else clear. There, it's been raised to me, you know, Jim Morris had two of his books squelched because, quote, they were too controversial. And I've been told, Steve, aren't some of these big shots going to make a move on the publisher and stop this book? I tell you what, they better not, because the gentleman who runs Overlook Press is a publishing legend, Peter Mayer, and nobody intimidates Peter Mayer. And if you do a little research on him, you'll find out why. So we are not concerned whatsoever that any pressure could stop this book coming out. So things are just going to move ahead, and it's up to, you know, people are going to have to decide. They're going to be truthful. Are they going to be transparent and open, or are they just going to talk it? Right? They're going to walk it, or are they going to talk it? We're going to give them a chance to walk that walk, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, next up, let's go to Florence, Oregon. Mark, thank you for holding. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, good evening, George and Stephen and Grant. Great to speak with you. I haven't heard, I think I've listened to the whole discussion tonight, and I haven't heard the two direct related UFO phenomena of animal mutilation as well as human abduction. And in the human abduction aspect, the phenomena is multifaceted, but one thing is they actually remove ovum and sperm from men and women.
Sure.
That's certainly a phenomenon that bears study, as well as the animal mutilations that seems to be done with surgical precision right out there in a pasture and such, that is almost beyond human ability. So here we have two aspects that are revealing, and actually we reveal these to ourselves by just looking at the preponderance of this massive amount of evidence in these two categories. Of course, as you gentlemen are probably aware, Dr. Stephen Jacobs feels that he leans very strongly toward these not being a good phenomena, at least the part of it. If it's multifaceted in its makeup and they're actually good creatures and, say, evil, or creatures that aren't for our highest good also using these craft, perhaps it's dual-natured. I was wondering if you had discovered anything which may indicate that, and also if you could comment just on these two phenomena, gentlemen, that don't seem seem to be good, but perhaps could be interpreted in some way or ways as being good, but it doesn't feel good to the creatures that die and the people that are abducted. That seems to be the most common reaction to it.
Well, let me quickly respond. First of all, that is advanced phenomenology, no question, and with many exopolitical implications. That material is not going to be in this book, I'm pretty sure. Grant may correct me. Though the contact issue that you've just referred to, we'll be in the X conference. We're going to be addressing it. Joe Montaldo, who has built up an organization called ICAR, and his contactee will be there. He's presenting. And then Roger Lear is going to be making a major announcement. He is one of the leading researchers in the world on implants, and it's been a major breakthrough in his work. So we will be getting into that. It is the number one exopolitical question and issue to resolve post-disclosure. And that, of course, is the contactee phenomena. The mutilation and everything is, I consider, an extraterrestrial-related phenomena. I believe it's ET in origin. Others may disagree. But again, these are outside the scope of the book, U.S. President. Oh, by the way, before we lose the hour, forgive me, Grant, for hogging here, but I just want to mention that the working title we have is not set in stone. It's U.S. Presidents and UFOs, the Untold Story. If anybody out there thinks you got a better title for this book, wants to submit it, send it on in to Coast to Coast, and they'll forward it to us. And also, I know there's some pretty darn good graphic artists out there in the audience. So if anybody wants to take a crack at a book cover, give it a shot, send it in.
I've got an idea for you there. Use the presidential seal, but make it look like a UFO from looking down on it from the top.
Well, that's an idea. Now your audience is going to have to translate that into some high-quality graphics. So if they get used, we'll certainly acknowledge you and probably get you some free books, too.
Well, how about a couple to give out on the program?
That'd absolutely. Nice.
Let's go to Gary in Austin, Texas, first-time caller. Hello, Gary, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
In 1957, I was a aviation cadet in the Air Force, and in that year, I forgot what month it was, all student pilots, officers, and cadets were called to the base theater, unannounced, just report to the base theater now. We all got seated, and a high-ranking Air Force officer came in, gave a short talk about security and UFOs, and told us flat out if we saw anything unusual, we were not to talk about it to anyone, Air Force or civilian, to not to mention it, and if we did, we'd be court-martialed, which I thought was very strange, because if the Air Force didn't want the information, it's about as strange they wouldn't want any new information.
Well, absolutely. We're running out of time right now, but Steve and Grant, I want to thank you two for being on the program. Good luck with your work, both of you, in revealing what presidents did or did not know. And Steve Bassett, I will see you in a few weeks in Washington, D.C.
Yes, indeed.
Stephen Bassett, Grant Cameron, their website's linked up to coasttocoastam.com. This is a floating format night tonight, so in a moment, and our other guest, Jim Elvidge, joins us. We talk about the universe solved. Fascinating discussion about reality and what that means for all of us. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.